How does the music intro work? I assume Quinn now performs for us live.
Yeah. Yeah, I sing right now. Jeff actually boxes. It sounds amazing, but it's true.
Yeah, you'd think those are like karaoke MIDI files, but that's actually me.
Another set's come out, the form is changing loads. You grab a Delver list, there's plenty that 5-0'd. Murktide is just a blue Gurmag that flies. Monkey and DRC may have the matches buys, but something unpredictable, the best card was white. Prismatic ending, Jesus Christ. So hide your Aether vials and you might be just fine. Put them on a shelf until the end of time. Chalice and Trinisphere, players in denial. For what it's worth, I've got Ian on speed dial. But something unpredictable, the best card was white. Prismatic ending, Jesus Christ.
Hello, welcome to the Canadian Threshold, the legacy podcast that's blind flipping Entreat the Angels when you put a Croson Grip on the stack, trying to kill a top circa 2017. 2016? When did you get
either will do.
Whenever it was legal.
2017.
It was evergreen for a while.
My name's Quinn Omori, and I'm here with my top-hating co-host, Jeff Kinsey.
I am your number one hater and the hater of tops.
Because you hate Terminus more, right?
Yeah. You know what? I'll advocate for that. Fuck Terminus.
Great segue into Brendan McBain, not here today. It's McBain's partner's birthday. Is that what's happening?
I think so. I don't know. It's clear that one of his partners is more important than the other.
I was trying to think of an MTG like food reference and I can't think of it, but anyways, McBain's out for dinner being a good husband. We have an upgrade. We have Dylan Petter, who, if you couldn't tell by the intro, miracles expert, now doomsday specialist. And we're gonna talk about kind of Dylan's journey in Magic and probably like a little bit about miracles, maybe a little bit about Doomsday, maybe a little bit about Modern Affinity. Who's to say?
Can we talk about writing letters to WotC? Because he's also an expert.
We can do all of the above.
All these things. Dylan, how's it going, man?
Great. I'm honored to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm hoping to be fun uncle.
You're doing a good job already. Welcome to the show, man. Thanks for joining us. The honor is all ours, I assure you. We have a bunch of things we want to talk to Dylan about. Before that, there's housekeeping. The world is healing, kind of.
We're getting there. And I, once again, have a stage to take. Top item, I think, for this podcast, Puget Sound Battleground, number 3. Tickets are currently for sale. The event is October 2nd and 3rd. Legacy, there's a $75 entry. And there's only 74 tickets remaining as of this recording. So if you're on the fence or you just haven't done it yet, like Quinn, please go purchase your ticket. They also have all these other events going on. There's old school, modern, team trios, all kinds of stuff. They get a bunch of artists and vendors down there. It's at the Angel of Winds Arena in Everett, Washington. I know... I'm 100%, Dad's 100%, Quinn is 100% if he can get a ticket, which might sell out by the time we're done recording.
I doubt that's going to happen.
It should be a very good time. Also, we have Eternal Weekend news, which is crazy to have Eternal Weekend news in July. Card Titan just announced this week on Twitter that it's going to be an online event in prep for a return to paper in 2022. So a bit disappointing, but totally understandable. And it also means that I don't have to look at spending like a week and a half just kind of orphaned on the, you know, eastern side of the states between the next event, which is the Missouri 100K happening October 23rd. That's sold out, but it's actually happening and it's upcoming. So there's events happening. It's very cool.
I guess they haven't said if the Eternal Weekend is going to have God accounts. I'm assuming it will based on what happened over the last year and a bit.
I think so. I think it's been pretty successful the few times they did it. I also do have some other more specific local news that I didn't put in the sheet because I forgot about it until just right now. Through Carrier Pigeon from friend of the show, Jeremy in Seattle, Mox Boarding House in Seattle and Bellevue are opening up again for Legacy Weeklies. And just reading through the list of these they have is, I'm so jealous. Mondays in Seattle at 6, Tuesdays in Bellevue at 7. It's just listed multiple times. But again, in Seattle on Mondays at 6 p.m. at Mox, you can play Paper Legacy. It's crazy. It's very exciting to see this stuff opening up. And I think Stronghold locally is going to be doing something, you know, by the end of the month, if not a little bit later. So we're almost there.
And as Jack mentioned when he was on the show, even better beer options near the Seattle Mox than before. So he'll be hungover on Tuesday too.
That is the worst part about Stronghold is there's like nowhere nearby to get even like a decent beer. Almost like any beer if you were to just go and get a beer.
Yeah, there's just no bars, really.
Yeah. You know, if we get enough subs to the Patreon, maybe we can open up a little boot camp or a bootleg liquor store outside of Stronghold. Specifically Thursday perfect. Nights. We'll pop up.
I'm sure they'll love that.
I'll say, I will know that Legacy is back and that COVID is over when we can do our road trips down to Seattle again. Enjoy a weekend down there. So good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any of like the Mox 1Ks and just, you know, renting an Airbnb and driving down there and, you know, two or three different cars.
Some of my favorite memories. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Technically,
my uncle and dad drunkenly playing decks they don't know how to play and yelling at each other.
Technically, we're allowed. Well, no, we'll be allowed once everyone's that's there is double vaxxed, right? Because you can go into the States, they don't care. And you can come home without quarantine if you have two vaccinations and a clean test.
That's right.
It's just a lot of work right now.
I wouldn't recommend it. I'm just saying you can legally do it. All right. Should we get the show on the road?
Yeah, I think so. The only other thing I wanted to say is that Missouri 100K, I'm excited that the state's happening. I have to figure out what my travel logistics look like, but other friend of the show, Elliot Fishduggery, and I will be heading down there and braving, whatever happens in Missouri. Although, as we talked about earlier, right now the COVID cases aren't looking very good. So hopefully some time between now and then changes it.
I mean, it'll be close to flu season, so I'm sure it'll be much better. Flights must be cheap though, right?
It's about $500 right now.
Oh, so not super cheap.
It's not super cheap. I'm sure it could easily be more expensive, but that's disappointingly expensive.
I should check. I was gonna try and fly across the country. I wonder if that's cheap still, because it was very cheap to go to like Toronto and stuff like that for a while.
I think local inside of Canada is pretty cheap.
It's still pretty cheap.
Yeah. For the geography podcast people.
We got to throw them something every episode.
inside of Canada is still pretty cheap. As soon as you cross the border, not so good.
I guess there's just like less flights down to the States. But yeah, anyways. Dylan, you've said a bunch of stuff, given our geography patrons something to talk about. But what we wanted you to talk about was kind of your experience in Magic. So, I mean, I think we're going to get into kind of specifics around probably like a little bit about like control decks and probably a little bit about Doomsday, but just to get people familiar, like How did you get started playing this sure. money and time waster that we've found ourselves sucked into?
my only claim to fame is that I'm really old. So I've been doing it on and off for quite a long time. And there's sort of like big gaps in between periods that I've come in and out. But I mean, Quinn, I think we're about the same age, but I remember standing in line to pick up unlimited starter packs, for example. And my first real, deck that really, well, first of all, just the lore got me into it and the amazing art. And I'm like a little tiny kid and just, loving that stuff. But then the deck that I really got into out of the gate was like Suicide Black, Dark Ritual into Hippie, into Jism. Like early days, just getting really fast beaters on the board and, doing a little combat math, or hopefully not, just because nobody can, who can beat a turn two Jism, right? It's impossible. Or actually, as I learned, as I started to attend sort of local tournaments and those sorts of things, the deck beats beats Suicide Black or Mono Black in those sort of early days of Magic. And so this is probably the transition where I start to learn about control decks, because I'm constantly getting beat by Swords to Plowshares, Counterspell, Wrath of God, Sarah Angel. Does this sound like a deck that you're familiar with? So I started to I'm gonna get into that deck, right? I'm a little kid. I can't beat them, so I'm gonna join them. But then my whole collection got stolen, and this is my first hiatus from Magic. That happens around the Dark Fallen Empires. So like in reality, it was a good time to leave. I sometimes look back and think about those Jisms and think that, I probably could have bought a house or something with them now, but they were gone. And so I sort of took off from Magic until probably Onslaught. I'm sort of coming back then. I'm starting to play standard Belcher, so here's combo coming in. But I really got into Extended, and this is where, I just loved playing Tog and early Extended. And then the deck that my first love before Miracles was Scepter Chant, and did many, many years of Scepter Chanting people and enjoying, saying no and not letting anybody do anything that I didn't want them to do.
Which I have seen you also sleeve up, post 2015.
I think actually, yeah, I think right after Top was banned, I was like, screw this. Let's do it proper. And I sleeved up Scepter Chant, and I remember not thinking that was such a weird thing for me. But then, like, people at Stronghold, all the locals were like, "What's going on? He's like, he's really doing it. He got Scepter Chant on the board." I'm like, "Well, yeah, that's the whole point of this thing. I mean, it's terrible now, but I do love that deck."
I think it was just like, they banned Top, and Dylan lost his mind. He's finally broken.
It was a really sad day. I remember getting messages from people on Facebook. Have you seen the update? Do you know what's going on? It's banned. What are you going to do? It was April 24th, 2017.
We had such good turnout that Thursday.
The worst part is that we did have really good turnout that Thursday. When you go back and you look at the results, I don't know if the deck was that dominant, but I don't, it's okay. I got past it.
I think I've made my feelings on that ban pretty clear over 50 something episodes, but you talked about kind of like playing Extended after you kind of got in, the second time. Is there like a line that like carries straight through to Legacy there?
Close. So, I was playing Extended up until maybe Ravnica, so 2005, and then I went off and I was doing school and that sort of stuff. And so still had all the cards, right? Hadn't had them stolen. And then I came back from, I went away to do some school, came back, and my cousin invited me to come play some Commander. And so, go over to his house and grab a whatever random deck and start playing. I remember going home that night and being like, okay, like you know, maybe I won't get sucked into like competitive spiky magic and I'll just play some fun commander. And so I get online and I start searching for commander decks because I had no idea about the format. And the first, the first thing that pops up is Joe Lissette playing Miracles. And this is the first time that I had sort of seen the deck in action, like sort of Modern Legacy in action there. And I don't think I've played Commander since. So immediately became obsessed with the Miracles deck and have just been, I mean, in the intro, you gave me far too much credit. I'm just sort of local grinder with some reasonable results and a lover of Miracles.
I guess, I mean, jumping off that, I mean, Miracles, obviously a deck you played, you talked a bit about like Scepter Chant. Mm-hmm. I mentioned, I feel like it was, you played a little bit of like Affinity and Modern and like maybe some Storm too.
I did play a bit of Affinity. I did do a little bit of Modern. I think I got into Modern because I was trying to port Scepter Chant into Modern until I figured out that it didn't work. and so I have played some Modern, not too much. The story around Storm is actually like the writing was on the wall that Top was going to be banned. And so I'm pre-planning like, well, what am I going to do when this happens? And like some of my favorite matches to watch in the world, you know, are you know, the finals Miracles versus Storm in the finals of Hots Rodrigo and Nicholas GP Prague.
Oh, that was a crazy match.
Right? GP Prague 2016. One of the best finals ever. We'll link it in the show notes, right?
This guy's a veteran. He knows what's up.
I can dig up the link. But I just, that's one of my favorite matches. And I started to love that from the Miracles side. But, you know, we've got local Storm Dad, Tristan, and our matches were just fantastic. And just those two decks. The one thing I hate, sorry, Jeff, is creatures. I've grown out of creatures. I don't ever want to cast a creature. And so I was like, well, what is this other deck I'm going to play? And so, I mean, I look like an MTG Finance genius now, but I went and bought a bunch of LEDs and this sort of stuff in 2016 before the ban. And really, you know, started to build out Storm as a bit of a second deck. And then once Top was banned, started to play it. But that's actually, so I sort of started playing it a little bit, but this is where, you know, there was a life after Top for Miracles. I remember, so shout out to Everyday Eternal. Matt, is Matt Pavlik still on Everyday Eternal?
He is. Not every episode, but he drops in like one out of three, I want to say.
So I remember being at McBain's house talking with Matt, and I think probably you two guys, and, you know, Matt was asking me, is Miracles dead after Top ban? And I said, yes, 100% it is. Turns out it wasn't. I think Min from the Min Max blog really deserves a lot of credit. He got the Discord going and really kept the community together. And so I sort of started participating in that. And that's when we built up what became known as Summer Miracles, which was the summer after Top ban. And that's where Portent, you know, became a thing and everybody trying to just play as many cantrips as possible in order to get things working. So lots of different decks. Yeah.
I feel like that idea too of just like jamming as many cantrips as you can. I mean, maybe there were other things pushing it too, but you look back at like deck lists from like 2010, 2011, even like as far forward as like 2015, 2016. And it's even like Ponder, like Miracles was playing it, but you would look at like, you know, like a Delver deck and they'd have like three copies of Ponder or like two copies of Ponder, which seems insane. And now this idea of just like, it's a one mana cantrip that lets you look at least two cards. It's good enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, we're getting into Miracles history, Miracles lore here, which is great. That's probably stronger at that stuff than I am Modern Miracles. As you're alluding to my switch to the evil Doomsday, but like shout out to Reed Duke, but in Reed's early lists, I remember actually watching an interview with him and he's like, I would rather just play more action spells than ponders. And that was sort of the going thinking at the time is, you know, why fill your deck with all this air? And then it's, you know, this is where even Joe Lissette wasn't playing the full amount of cantrips, right? This is where sort of Philip and Angelo and Claudio and all these other sort of true miracles masters started to innovate with the deck, with both top and then mentor, and like really making the deck just a pile of answers, air and answers. And I think that's probably the sort of the most finely tuned version of the deck pre top ban.
That changed too when like mentor came out. Like, I think probably you, I was gonna say the first time I saw this, it was probably when I was playing you. You know, you're always thinking like, I might make angels at some point. Like, I'm just gonna, like, you know, if you're a creature deck, I'm gonna keep like hitting them, and I'm just gonna try and like just need to like stay alive long enough and avoid Terminus or counter the Terminus until like, you know, I can get them and they can't make the angels. And I remember like mentor coming down and being like, yeah, two tops. I think I'm pretty sure it was you. It's two tops, and I'm like, okay, and you're just like flip top. You're like, oh no, flip the other top. Like, oh no, and like,
yep.
Suddenly, it's just a board of monks, and it's like, that's not only do you have a board of monks now, you know, which is like, hey, they don't fly like angels, but you have a full handful of new cards. Like, it's just everything's happening.
And the shift from like Entreat, where you have a card where you're like, I'm floating this card, you know, the whole game or whatever, and I pick my spot and I fire off the one shot, you know, and then you have to attack or whatever, but you know, engineer your one spell versus mentor, where like all you need to bet is they just don't have a removal spell, you know, or you have like a single counter, and you can just, the fact that like, I mean, playing against like D&T or something, you can just run it on like turn three and then just be like, yeah, I'm gonna like cantrip once or twice like after that, and like all of a sudden it's a gigantic problem. It was nuts.
Well, think about this question in relation to like modern card design. So, I mean, think about what Miracles was doing back in 2016-17 with Entreat the Angels. Like, how do you win? You have to somehow get the one card in your deck on the top of your library and draw it at the right time at a point in time when you know that your opponent can't do anything about it because it's really your only win condition and you can't get it back in your deck. Jace obviously is a secondary win condition or snap beats, but nevertheless, it's like that's a machine that you have to get working and set up at the right time in order to win. And that's powerful. And to be frank, it's like super interesting mm-hmm. in how you're making this thing run. And then like, hey, I love mentor, and I don't think it's anything close to 2019 or newer design, but you know, as an analog, I throw my creature down and it does the thing and I win.
Yeah. You either win right away or you just generate value over time. And I guess a lot of decks, that's good enough. It's interesting thinking about Entreat too, and like you didn't even get a second chance with Mystic Sanctuary, you know, like whereas now, you know, you mm-hmm. can blow up one retreat and then be like, oh, it's back on top, end of turn.
And that's like when like Cleek was so good, and that was like Lissette Miracles, where you have like the like Venser, Cavern, and like Cleek, so you can like
the value.
Like in the mirror, you can cast like an uncounterable Cleek to like take their Entreat or like whatever. Like it's so good. You get the Caracas, like that's magic.
Exactly. And like think about the value you're trying to edge out of. Again, it's like a machine. You've got your Caracas, mm-hmm. you've got to get your Venser going, you've got to get your Cleek going, you've got to play around removal to get them on the board at the right time. A ton of interaction. I mean,
and your opponent's not even down a card.
No. No, they get to draw the card again, or they get to pick up the card from Venser. No, it's it's like virtual card advantage. Which, yeah. Again, if you look back at those old Miracles decks, they don't draw that many cards. Like back in the day, until we start getting into predict Miracles and those sorts of things, you're really only drawing cards with Jace.
You know what's really interesting looking at Miracles specifically is like the amount of innovation that happened specifically with older cards. And that's usually been kind of pushed because of something like a top ban or whatever. But like, you know, the adoption of Predict, like Predict was around forever. That isn't like a new thing came out and all of a sudden it was like good. That was just like, actually, I think this has value in the shell. And that's really interesting. And like the shift to Portent too, which is probably less interesting of a change because it's kind of more of an analog to like what you're trying to do with top. But like, it is interesting to see that those were never broken wide open by, like, you know, new printings. It was just, this is the thing we're trying to do with the deck, and these are, you know, different directions we could take it in based on these older cards.
Yeah, trying to fill a hole. Like, Portent was really trying to fill a hole. I mean, there's some fantastic plays with Portent, right? When you go target you, you know, and on turn six, then, you know, the
game's pretty much over. And your opponent goes, wait, can I read Portent? I didn't know I can do that.
No, it's in German, sorry. but Predict, yeah, I mean, Predict was one that came out of sort of nowhere. It was a bit of a response. I don't know if you remember at the time, there were sort of the Grixis lists that were, you know, hemming, taking on the Miracles list at the time through him and Culligan's Command, mm-hmm. and, you know, generating card advantage that way. And so it was just a response to trying to keep up with that deck. Because, like, the Grixis deck was actually really difficult for 2017, 2018 Miracles.
Man, I'm not unhappy that's not around anymore.
Grixis?
Which Grixis?
Grixis. Like it's the play patterns are different than they are would be now, obviously, but, like, it just felt like every match you play against Grixis, you're running into, like, getting snap him, then you're just like, I just want to have cards in my hand. Or, like, the upkeep Culligan's Command to, like, get back a snap and make you, or say the draw step, like, you discard a card, I'm going to get back Snapcaster. Like, it's so brutal.
Jeff, I think the Eternal Weekend that we went down to and subsequently bombed out of together, which was great, by the way. But I think remember Greg Mitchell was down there, and I think he was playing Grixis with full four hymns, four Snapcasters, like just the most evil version of that deck. And I was really quite happy I didn't have to go up against him with that.
It wasn't a bad experience bombing out early. No. I think some of the best highlights is very not good content for the podcast was eating those giant sandwiches with french fries in them and then drinking way too much and then trying to talk through. I think on paper we were playing Death and Taxes versus Solidarity, but that was just me and you trying to figure out the best way to play High Tide. A real 2v0 matchup.
Oh, I forgot about that. We had reset High Tide.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So good. You just got those German resets.
Italian.
Sorry.
Yeah, they're only in Italian.
They don't print the legends in German. Otherwise, you know, we would have had them.
It's interesting thinking about, like I said, it's interesting so many times this podcast because it's been interesting thinking about, like, Grixis control. And how that deck, I mean, I guess for the three of us, I mean, at some points it's just like, you're just like, God, this is unbeatable. Even when Probe was legal, I remember, like, probing them sometimes and being like, well, I guess I'm dead. I'm going to draw a card. But, like, how do I beat this hand? To the point where we're at now where, like, you hardly ever see it. It's just the threats are so big. You kind of only need to, like, sneak that one through. And suddenly you're, like, accruing advantage, or it's just powerful enough if it sticks around for, like, even a turn, which is kind of crazy when you think about, like, yeah, that, like, those lines, like, him, snap, him, which now mm-hmm. seems like, I'm like, wow, four mana in one turn. And you're not, like, you're not bringing Uro back from the graveyard. Are you kidding me?
Should we timestamp this episode as 2018? I think that'd be great. Yeah. But I don't know, is Grixis control difficult for you, Quinn, and for you, Jeff? I mean, I've never played it as a D&T or...
2020, yeah, it was very hard back then.
It's like Infect's worst matchup.
Really?
Everything's a 2-for-1, they have permission, they have disruption, they him you. There's a, speaking of videos, we're not going to link to this one, but there is a video of me playing, I'm like, why can't I think of his name right now? I keep saying, wanting to say Tim Wilder, and it wasn't Tim. It was.
I think I know what you're talking about. What is his name with the jacket? It's not the best way to refer to him, but shit.
Oh, Tim from Tim.
Not
from
Tim.
Seattle.
It wasn't Tim.
Oh, okay.
Tim and I did play the
Josh.
Josh. It was Josh Monks.
With the jacket.
And he hymns me, and then he and I'm like, and the announcer's like, oh, that's a pretty, like, backbreaking hymn, for Quinn, and then, like, I, like, kind of just, like, land go. And then he goes, Snapcast. They're like, oh, he's doing the Snapcast. He's gonna hit him again. What's Quinn gonna do? I'm like, I'm gonna lose. This is what's gonna happen. I have one card in hand. But now you think about that stuff, and it just, I don't know, the whole deck seems like those plays are powerful, but the pieces just like don't have enough oomph.
Yeah, I mean, you him somebody, you know, two times in the first few turns of the game, and they're just gonna, you know, bring back an Uro that you put in their bin.
Oh, exactly that. The major control and mid-range deck of the format has a recursible threat, and then every combo deck is basically geared up to be faster than it.
Yeah, that's, I think that was a big one. Like the speed, there was a certain point, like in like the pre-bannings legacy, where the speed knob and all the combo decks kind of got like dialed up to 11.
Yeah. I mean, do you remember when Marsh Casualties was good? No, they were just talking about this era. Fuck. I remember getting blown out. I think this was actually at GB Seattle. I think it might have been another match that was on camera. And my opponent got snap, Mars Casualties, kick it. Like, this is like 7 mana.
Oh, man.
It's brutal. Man, let's just go back to 2018, 2017. That ruled.
Sorry, I'm going to bring us out of this 2017, 2018. Because you were saying, like, you know, that stuff kind of happened because, yeah, like the other control deck has a recursive threat. I know you've been buying pieces for it, Dylan, but like, what is your kind of current feeling on like quote unquote miracles? I don't think there are any cards that actually have the keyword miracle on them anymore, but.
Oh, there are. I mean, if you go look at Anurag's lists, then
since Terminus, you know, still.
There's probably a minimum of 3 Terminus in those lists. I mean, there's also 4 color control lists that don't have it, or I've seen some people replacing Terminus with Engineered Explosives just because basically, you know, Delver is playing how many one drops now? All the one drops. So that makes sense. But I mean, so my thoughts are, I still have yet to ever cast an Oko. Quinn, how are you doing on that front?
I'm good, and now I'm going to be good.
I know. Same with me. So
how have I cast the most Okos on this podcast?
I've cast some on Arena in draft.
Look at this guy just bragging about 7-0-ing a draft.
I didn't say 7-0'd. I just said I cast them.
You had Oko.
We don't need to go into what my record was when I had the Oko. When I played the Oko, probably lifetime undefeated. But anyways, yeah, so, 0 Okos.
0 Okos? Okay, that's good. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't... The deck, when it turned into 4-color snow, that's when it was seriously not miracles anymore. And, it, you know, a lot of the lists didn't have any miracles cards. I don't want to get on a, you know, 2019 fire printing soapbox here, because I know, you know, that's been
because we have that covered, but... like every episode.
But I could go into that, right? So everybody knows, you know, what that talk track is. But so, like, to transition more into modern miracles, I think it's starting to come back to a place where I'd get pretty excited about it, right? And what do I want to be doing? I want to be super reactive, right? I want to be controlling the stack, and sort of being able to make decisions about when I'm going to turn the corner or not, whenever possible. And, you know, Uro, as, you know, as much as it's an obviously, you know, OP card, super pushed, I feel like there's a little bit more play to it than just sort of slam Oko and make a 3/3. And then I think there's been some pretty cool printings, right? And the most obvious one is, I think, Prismatic Ending, which is probably, and I mean, I know you guys have talked about it on the pod before, and certainly many others have, right? It's probably the best piece of removal that's been printed in 10 years. I don't know. What can we even compare it to? Like Abrupt Decay.
Council Judgment, I think, is the closest.
I think it might be better than Swords. Now, that's like, I know this is going to be like a
blasphemy.
People are going to add us on Twitter.
That, like, but hot of a take. Like, I think it's probably accurate
in like current Legacy, because it hits Planeswalkers. Yeah. which is actually like super relevant.
It's before everything. It was,
like, before you could see like Jason Lilly and like once in a while like Gideon, you know, now
keep
printing better ones. Hits Sylvan Library, which speaking of cards that I feel like, relevant. Like underplayed for a long time, like now.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know, when you play it in your main deck and like it just feels like you draw it and you're like, oh yeah, like no problems here.
It is one of those cards that you wish you'd like, you know, if you could have more than four of it, you just absolutely like, you're never that unhappy to draw it. It deals with, you know, near everything.
Yeah. Like unless you're playing against like Storm, it's always useful, right?
Storm. Even against Storm.
Yeah. Sometimes you just,
somebody play, you know, you play LED. An early LED. I mean, less so now because there's less of a risk of counterbalance, but in, you know, when playing against 2018 Miracles, Storm player pilots would throw all their mana on the table because they wanted to get around counterbalance, and I could see that coming back a little bit. But it's so useful in every situation. I mean, it's so rare that a new piece of removal is going to go into a deck as a four of, mm-hmm. and this is in some lists main deck four of. And yeah, it hits absolutely everything. It does everything you want. I mean, I believe it. I think there was, you know, one of somebody was saying that at an instant it was the most powerful removal spell ever printed. I think I would totally buy that. I think as a sorcery, it's absolutely up there. But it just provides so much flexibility to the deck, right? There's so many fewer things. And I think the most important is that you can one for one answer Delver on curve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fact that like despite it having an X cost that's just to like, you know, puff up your converge mana, like the fact that you can just cast it for single white and get rid of, you know, anything somebody found off of an Urza Saga or like a Delver or a Monkey or whatever, like it's very good.
Oh, and the fact that it will hit any lock pieces as well, right? So You've got your stompy decks, you've got your aggro tempo decks covered, and even, you know, there's some splash hate there for your storm combo decks, right? Any combo deck that wants to play a permanent. So on, you know, that's one side of the format. Now switching to the other side of the format, you've got other new printing in All-Star Endurance, right? And so now you've sort of got your modern Vendilion clique. I mean, I know we were talking about this a little bit earlier in 2019, 2018 Magic, clique being your instant that you're sort of trying to get a little bit of value from. It doesn't necessarily draw you a card or anything, but that's sort of modern endurance,
mm-hmm.
right? Pitch it to clear out your opponent's graveyard, instant speed, block a Delver, similar to clique.
They both block Delver, but one survives.
Yeah, one block's a little better. Big.
Yeah, hey, power creep there for you.
It's interesting to see Endurance and Prismatic Ending come at like the same time when they both do honestly somewhat similar things. Like if you look at kind of the Venn diagram, like the overlap of things they cover, like, you know, Prismatic Ending covers nearly everything that's in play, and Endurance covers a chunk of stuff that's not in play.
Yeah. But that, I think what you're saying, the Venn diagram overlaps at Delver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and this is where, you know, when this new set was released, everybody was talking ban on one of the one drops, one of the red creatures for Delver, whether it's Monkey or the other one.
Dragon Rage Channeler.
Yeah. But that really hasn't turned out to be that big of a problem. And I you know, this is the reason why. It's you've added in 6 to 8 main deck cards to the premier, you know, mid-range control deck that directly answer a Delver. And then they splash 8 on the other, basically everything else in the format, right? Endurance splash 8s on combo, and Prismatic Ending splash 8s on anything not combo.
Man, you're kind of selling me on this ban control deck now. Do I need to buy a rose? But also buying four Uros is a lot cheaper than buying four Ragavans and four Urza's Saga, which is like every other list. I'm like, ooh, that's cool. I'm like, oh no.
When you're talking about endurance, or not endurance, Prismatic Ending, this is the second time I did that, and you're listing off like the lock pieces and everything that it deals with, is this just the white Oko?
Because no, you leave a 3-3 behind.
Like, yeah, because it's not the white blue, Oko. Yeah. And it doesn't leave a creature behind. But like, one of the most like annoying things about Oko was that it could deal with everything, right? And like, you felt like, obviously Oko can do it recursively. Like, it just keeps doing it. And, you know, it can also make blockers, blah, 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 blah. But like, the same problem exists here where you're like, a lock piece isn't safe. A creature isn't safe. An enchantment isn't safe. An artifact isn't safe. Like, it's a
one for one.
It is a one for one.
I think that's interesting. I think the card might be a mistake, but it's not like a Oko mistake where you're like, great, you like came down, answered my thing, and now, you know, you like,
well, it's playable in Legacy, so it's a mistake.
I definitely don't mind continuing to play a game of Magic after a Prismatic ending has resolved, as opposed to an Oko.
So I mean, I'm the type of person, I've always said, you know, don't ban answers, ban questions, right? And it's having a threat that's too good, a finisher that's too good, something that can't be answered, right? That's what's going to make the game unfun. But being able to answer something means you have to put that answer into your deck and play it and have it at the right time and all the rest of it. This was for years, right? I was the miracles guy, and you know, people would get angry at Terminus coming down on them because it's such a, you know, OP and pushed, and
you can name exist. Names right here.
Jeff and I played many matches. I don't think he ever got upset at a Terminus.
It was always fun. There's an opportunity to recruit a Flickerisp again and start the chain over.
But I mean, I'd be willing to go the other way on Prismatic Ending. I think it's too early to call, but it's, you know, you no longer have to make a decision around playing Disenchant. And that used to be a big decision, right? What are you playing in your sideboard? Are you going to play Disenchants? Are you going to play Engineered Explosives? Are you going to play Council's Judgments? Like, what set of threats do you want to be able to answer out of your control deck? And that decision had consequences. You're going to play Red Blasts, right? All of these things started to take up the same sideboard slots. But all of, like, with the printing of Prismatic Ending, you freed up a huge chunk of your blue-white X control deck sideboard. Because you don't... Like, who needs Disenchant?
Do you feel like that homogenization of answers is good? I agree it's, like, good for, like, the deck. But I mean, like, in terms of... We talked about this before, but, like, just super lightly... Like, do you think it makes for, I guess, like, fun or like interesting gameplay when it's like, I'll just pack the thing that deals with everything?
Well, I think what I'm saying is, like, it's too early to call it. To know.
That's fair. I'm not here like, this sucks, get rid of it. I'm just, it's interesting to talk about. Because, like, I always really like the tension between I'm going to play Engineered Explosives, but then, oh, shit, this thing, you know, is 4 CMC, I can't deal with it. Or, like...
For sure.
Although, I mean, if you can't EE for 4, you can't Prismatic Ending for 4, but...
But there's definite drawback, right? Or am I, if I have a Red Blast, I can't answer a non-blue threat. Or if I'm playing Disenchant, how do I get rid of that Planeswalker? Mm-hmm. Those decisions is definitely the fun that I've always had in Legacy as a traditionally a control player, right? And trying to, you know, I've probably spent more time, you know, watching Anurag play and looking at my deck list and changing that one sideboard slot that I've actually spent playing, trying to game, you know, the metagame and figure out exactly what it is that I want to answer. And I'm nowhere near as good as friend of the show, Colin, who would game our local metagame every weekend.
Sideboard master.
The sideboard master. So I think, you know, what's going to determine that is the format still super fun to play, and are there new decisions that it creates? So I turn that question around on you as somebody who's being Prismatic Ending. Is, you know, do you feel like it's too much?
It's, I don't know if I'd say it's too much. I think what's not interesting from my side is you just have something that deals with near everything, and that, like, sucks.
Yeah,
you know, having one thing, like, before Colgan's Command, you're like, wow, you know, they can deal with my artifacts, holy shit. I mean, that was a 2-for-1, but this is kind of the same, you know, note of like, why is there such a good white card that I can't even play? But the interesting, you know, dynamic that I think it does create is it does push to, like, maybe this is something that happens in the future, but like, what are relevant like 5 CMC or up things you can play? Maybe they're being cheated into play somehow, or they have some kind of, you know, inherent cost reduction. Like, I mean, what looks really good when people are packing a bunch of prismatic endings is something stupid like Gurmag Angler, you know, like anything in that vein where you kind of break out of, like, if people start dealing with this and this is what they have for, like, this is all I'm going to play to deal with anything, it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that.
What if I told you there was a Gurmag Angler, but it was blue and it flew?
Or what about friend of the show, the Goose?
The Goose. The Goose could come back.
I don't the know goose if the can't Goose is back. Getting loose anytime.
Endurance is really good against the Goose. Not only does it block a fully online Goose, it also makes him very small.
Yeah, so I mean, the trouble with ending, I think, is just the flexibility that it gives.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and yeah, it can answer anything. And so what is that going to do to the format? And is that too good? And so as I was saying, like, I never thought that Terminus should be banned. I don't think Prismatic Ending should be banned, but, you know, it's probably a similar conversation, right? You're starting to get into the territory of, is this removal too good? Which I don't feel like if we look at the banned list, is there any removal on there?
No.
Chaos. That's a good question. Yeah, Chaos Orb. Falling Sky. Notably, like, also deals other
than those two. That's it, yeah. I think, like, Dylan having you on the show and being on the, you know, the losing end of a lot of our matches, I think thinking of the Peak Miracles
too much
time,
credit. Yeah,
I just want to say, are you saying that he was on the losing end of a lot of your matches?
No, I was on the losing end.
Okay, that felt very like out of character, like.
But when I did win, I always felt very smart. I'm like, I had to do some. Well, not always. I mean, I play combo decks, so sometimes I was like, you didn't have a Swords of Plashers, and I turned to you. But a lot of times it was like, okay, I like chipped in for damage until I couldn't chip in for damage anymore, and then I just drew cards until I couldn't do it. And then I felt really good about like how that match went. And then from the opposite side, you know, when I would be like, I blew my hand too early and like the swordsman was there and I was like, maybe he doesn't have it. Of course he has it. He's been like playing, you know, sculpting a hand and doing things and like, you know, letting me hit him for 5 one time and then just taking one. And it like, I think when the answers are specific, mm-hmm. it really makes you be like, oh, and maybe this is just a perception thing, but it's like, geez, I got outplayed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Magic always has an element of like luck, obviously. And when you're top decking, sure, we've all gotten lucky or been on the opposite side of that. Whereas Prismatic Ending is just like, oh, they just had a Prismatic Ending. So it didn't matter. You know, I had 3 choices and I made a choice and committed a permanent to the board and they just killed it. And I think that is a little bit different.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, being able to play, as we said, being able to play 4 cards that answer any card under 4 CMC, let's say. Most Miracles decks you're going to see these days are 3, right? You're going to primarily see Bant. There's a little bit of Jeskai here and there. I think the only hope for Jeskai might be Blood Moon, unless you go into some of the standstill lists I've seen more recently. But Bant's going to be the primary one, so you're 3 CMC. So, I mean, actually, Jeff, what you were saying, like looking at 4 CMC threats, 5 CMC threats in your sideboard to take on a Bant control list could be a thing. I was watching Anurag's stream and I saw Thrun played against him the other day, which I was like, oof, that, first of all, that is sweet. Like,
unequivocally, yes.
Thrun hits the table, props. But then, you know, what a great little sidestep there. So the format could, right? Like everybody was worried about Delver, you know, Bant has taken care of that. So where does the format go from here? If we can get into a nice cycle of questions and answers, then all of a sudden, you know, you could have a pretty fun and interesting format.
I do like that we brought you on here under the pretense of talking to you about, you know, your experience and your decks and what you think. And instead we just put you on trial for Prismatic Ending.
How can you sit here and defend Prismatic Ending?
to be honest, only because it's like there's a glimmer of a hope that something approaching, you know, the Miracles deck that I love, you know, the 2016 to 2019 versions of Miracles is somewhat playable again.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it is, but there's, you know, there's something there and there's new and interesting cards.
So there's like that, a little kind of bud, you know, of like card control, and maybe given enough time, sunlight and water, it'll, you know, blossom.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's nice.
The last card we haven't talked about that's new for Miracles is Abundant Harvest. I know, I think the last episode, which is how I ended up on this episode in our back channel chats, there was some discussion around Harvest and why is it in the deck or is it good in the deck? So my opinion for what it's worth is it's fantastic in the deck. And I think that the change that makes that true is no more counterbalances and libraries. So, right, the reason that you're playing Portent or, you know, some other bad cantrip is so that you can control your top deck for counterbalance and feel like you've got a big brain when you've guessed right. you can't do that with Abundant Harvest, right? But what you can do is play less lands to open up more space in the deck, and then late game, you know, get the card you want. And even with, you know, with a Portent, you're not getting a land on the same turn, right? You're going to have to wait till next turn. And so in the early game, it's terrible. If you're keeping one of the worst things in Summer Miracles was keeping your one lander with only a Portent and then, you know, rolling the dice. And you don't really want to play, you know, Portent was probably the best cantrip for that situation because of counterbalance. But with Abundant Harvest, you know, early game you're getting your land, late game you're getting your action spell, and you can clear the top of your library with, you know, Brainstorm or what have you, or even just clearing whatever lands you end up cycling onto the top and just clearing them away. So I think, I mean, it's actually a pretty exciting card because, you know, Wizards years ago said they were never going to print another cantrip or another one mana cantrip, and I think they've sort of done it. and in a pretty interesting way, right? Like forcing decks into non-blue mana to get it, and the mechanic is somewhat different from a traditional cantrip.
I like their, like, you know, the contract that was written up says, like, we will never print, you know, a one mana spell that says draw a card on it, and somebody's like, wait. What if it were to put it in your hand?
Gets around Narset.
Yeah.
So I guess the big question off the top is, when Paper Legacy's back, are you going to be there with Bant Control, you know, the Petter spin of Bant Control? He's not sold.
I will, but I think, you know, previously, what, like, you know, what was I going to play on any given week, right? I was always there playing Miracles, and I think going forward it'll be, you know, am I playing that or am I playing some degenerate combo deck, most notably Doomsday, because Doomsday is just sweet. So I might be playing that.
It will be justice to watch you get endurance the first time you show up with a Doomsday pile.
I've been doing pretty well against endurance. I think I've been on MTGO, I've been got by it once, maybe twice, out of, you know, four or five leagues now. But there's the Doomsday community has been brewing up some good answers to it. Pact of Negation is the current one. So just draw into your pact and, you know, zero mana counterspell that stupid creature.
It's true. Like, I mean, the thing is, like, once the Doomsday resolves, like, you basically have, between all the cycling stuff too, like, uncounterable ways to get everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Thoughtseize deck. It's a Force of Will deck.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I can't remember who said this might have been like a Tristan quote or maybe somebody else, but it's, you know, I always used to talk about, you know, I want to be a reactive deck. I want to be a control deck. I want to, you know, basically, you know, be able to say no to what my opponent is doing or have some control over the flow of the game a la, you know, Septa Chant. And I think it was Tristan who said to me, like, he's, you know, our aunt father. He's like, well, I do that, but then I just kill them on turn two. Right. And it's, there's sort of that idea that, you know, some of these combo decks, and I think, you know, with Doomsday, you have a combo deck that's full on cantrips, Force of Wills, dazes, and discard. You know, with Miracles, you had to control the game until turn 10 or 12 against Dad until, you know, turn 16, 18, 20. But with Doomsday, you control the game for the first turn, two turns, three turns. And then try to turn the corner from there. And it's, so I've sort of, you know, due to maybe, you know, fire magic and that whole soapbox, and due to COVID and sort of being stuck away from our community, learned to appreciate a new deck. So that's a nice little outcome out of COVID.
Yeah. The truth is Doomsday is like the control player's combo deck, right?
It's interesting because it also had like some hardcore combo players play it because you can just turn one.
Mm-hmm.
I've embraced turn one, Jeff. I'm sorry.
I love just the shifts though in Doomsday because it feels like more controlling of a combo deck than like nearly any other combo deck. And like, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, almost like Depthian, like the kind of shift between like turbo and like, you know, the real slow where you're just happy to hit your land drops and like find your spot. But like, the fact that the deck can still, you know you're playing as a deck that doesn't have a way to interact with the combo, and you just go like, all right, I got my ritual, I got my Doomsday, like I'm casting that and I'm passing, and that's the plan. Like, you have this like just giant inevitability in those cases. That's so sick.
Well, like, think about it. I'm the person who loved to top and look at the top three cards and set those up. Now I get to look at the top five cards and set those up. But to be honest, like, I get a there's a big rush to get out of Doomsday, right? Because it's unlike a combo deck where you are like, okay, you have to make the decision to turn, and like you either win or you don't win. That decision about winning or not winning is drawn out over potentially a couple of turns, where it's, you know, you have to be like, did I pick the right five cards? Right, you can only play around certain things, right? Did I put a massacre in the five, or did I try to just go for it, right? Did I try to play some removal for an Ink Moth Nexus, or, you know, is there a Red Blast in there? And so there's all these like minute decisions that you have to make in some of the piles that, when it works, like, I get a little bit of a rush. So it's super fun.
There is a feeling of like getting away with it. Right?
Yeah, 100%. And then sometimes you get the turn one and I feel bad.
You're not a true degenerate if you feel bad.
Yeah,
I feel,
you're
a little bit bad.
Not a combo player yet.
I feel a little bit bad.
I feel like there's kind of two types of combo deck. I mean, there is obviously any combo deck can like, you know, go off really early, but there are decks that are like pretty linear, you know, like they just do a thing. And then, yeah, there are decks like Doomsday, I'm biased, Infect, Storm, or at least Ant. Maybe like Tess is a little bit different, but they just, you know, like, yes, everyone, I think I've talked about this before, everyone remembers when they get turn one, but no one remembers when you like, you were just grinding away and then you got them, you know, when you, then you're like, oh, I sense a weakness, now it's my chance. I think even Jeff, you're probably going to roll your eyes at this, but like, even like Omnitel, like you grind until you don't. And then other times you go Ancient Tomb Petal and kill them. But like, those decks are like, I need to stop you from doing a thing so that I can do my thing. And sometimes I just do my thing. But a lot, I think the majority of games you win with those decks, if you're good, are like when you've been like, okay, I've now countered enough things and sculpted in my hand, and the chances of you being able to like stop me are like basically zero. It's my time. And I have two life left.
Do you know what that's like, Jeff?
No.
He knows what it's like to have two life left.
Have you ever delved into the world of combo, Jeff? I'm interested.
Mostly on stream. which I think was our most successful streams have been combo, the notable 4-1 with Divining Witch. I've played a little bit of combo, not too much. I've played Anth a few times on stream and then also just like online. I've played it more than I've done good with it. I've definitely, you know, I can get the basic lines where you're just like, oh yeah, they got nothing, I've got this, let's go. But once you get into, you know, really setting up like future turns and thinking about what you need or really putting the pieces together, what you need, like building a long-term plan, like I'm not good at that. And I've played a little bit of, you know, Sneak and Show, but combo is something I'm trying to dabble in right now with tinkering around with depths here and there.
Well, I'll say, because I don't think the guys try to get you into Doomsday all that often, but the Doomsday Discord and like community is fantastic. They've got a, you know, huge props and shout outs to that group of folks. I'm just a Doomsday noob there, and I'm just reading all the content they produce, but there's a full wiki with all the info you're going to need to know about the history of the deck and versions of the deck and why you're choosing, you know, one thing over another, and a super supportive community there. So
that's, you know, good.
If you're interested in it, I recommend.
I'll check it out. The last time I actually played Doomsday was, I remember this fondly, it was playing Vintage Doomsday in probably, I don't know, 2015 at my friend's house. And there was three of us just standing around the computer yelling at each other for what line, like, no, you have to take this and this card. And then we put it together. And just, like, you know, when you're playing Magic Online and your opponent takes like 4 or 5 minutes to resolve a single spell, that was us, because we were all yelling at each other. And it was glorious. It was so good. So it'd be interesting to see what it's like when the deck's actually good.
I was going to say, it's more complexity now, but it's a little bit easier sometimes too.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, the printing of Thassa's Oracle obviously gives Doomsday probably the best win con it's had. Again, I don't know that much about the history of the deck, but, you know, it's tier one playable where it hasn't been before, and I'm pretty sure that's thanks to Thassa's Oracle. So, you know, with the right printings in the future, I'm sure we could be talking about a Thassa ban at some point. Hopefully not. Knock on wood.
Thassa's Oracle too.
That's the really interesting thing, because I don't think it's like Doomsday is obviously tier one. I think you can hate it out if you really like, if it became a problem. Although it is pretty resilient too, because it has that like discard counter magic suite. And so, like, as it stands, like, Thassa's Oracle is not, like, problematic in that deck. But it's just a card that screams, like, one day you'll be sorry that you printed me.
It's a legacy playable card that says you win on it.
Yeah, that's a good way of summing it up.
Yeah, it's, like, Delver keeps the Doomsday deck in check. Delver is the difficult match. Basically anything with lightning bolts and that can put pressure on. So you cast Doomsday, lose half your life, and all of a sudden, you know, you're really worried. When you're in, you know, or trying to keep up with the Doomsday community, it's the one and only topic is, how do you beat Delver? What is it? You know, what's the latest tech for beating Delver? There was a few moments there where endurance was a topic. But that's, you know, mostly figured out new way to deal with that threat. But it's just always how, you know, what's going to be done to beat Delver this week.
I think it's Prismatic Ending. Bring back that was Max that was playing Esper Doomsday, right?
Yeah.
With the Teferi.
Yep.
Instant, there you go. Instant speed Prismatic Endings.
Ooh.
I can't believe that's, I haven't done that yet. I know what I'm doing this Thursday. I'm sleeping up Teferi and Prismatic Ending. I'm going to instant speed.
It's too good. Yeah, I mean, that's another pretty cool thing about the Doomsday list is you can, you know, blue, black, plus whatever their color you want, right? You can throw in white, you can throw in green, you can throw in red, you can go straight blue, black.
I like the flexibility within it. Like, you see the personal tutor lists and, you know, different stuff like that, where you branch out in different speeds and different, you know, bases you're covering.
Yeah.
Speaking of old cards that have gotten life suddenly, I just remember the first time I read like personal tutor in a list and had to be like, I can't exactly remember what this does, but it must be good if it's in Legacy. I'm like, I guess it's okay. It's good here, but okay.
That is a card that I was trying to fit into a miracles list for years and just could never make it work. And then, hey, all of a sudden, playable.
I hope you got them when you were trying to do that, because they're sure.
I do not own four, and you do see some Doomsday lists running like all four of them. So I got two at a pretty reasonable price. But that's a card that has shot up in value for MTG Finance listeners.
We just got to wait around until they reprint it. It's one of those cards that's like expensive until suddenly it's not at all.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, it's not restricted list. So if you want it and don't need it, yeah, hold your horses. Yeah.
Well, recruit. It's like Imperial Recruiter, the Portal Special.
Oh, P3K. Yeah, exactly.
What are those worth now? Oh, maybe we shouldn't go into that.
Not like $200. That's all you need to know.
The P3Ks are still very expensive.
Yeah,
that. Yeah. Jeff won't play Painter until he can get P3K recruiters.
Look, all I'm saying, if there's a P3K version, that's the one you should be playing.
Thanks. If you want to buy those for me, I'll tell you when my birthday is coming.
Do we want to talk about other new boogeymen of the formats? Saga?
Tell me your thoughts.
Oof, yeah. I would love to know, outside of like us just saying that we hate it, which is...
Imagine Saga finding top.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. So I've never played with it. I've only seen it on the other side of the board and realized that it is ridiculously powerful. My initial thought, selfishly, is that I hope it gets McBain back into Painter, because I would just love to see him sleeving up some Painter and putting on some overalls at some point.
That's like your favorite band coming back and touring again.
Oh, exactly.
I think the thing about... It's like that Bob Wong list looks like it's the best list, best Painter, quote unquote, list. And it
Is
does
that the,
have like
the Delver Painter list.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it doesn't have Delvers, but it has Ragavan. And I'm like,
okay,
this is powerful.
Yeah.
I think it might be one of the better expressive iteration decks, but it's kind of like when your favorite band comes on tour and they have a new lead singer and they're just like, no, it's fine. This sucks. Don't worry, guys. You know, like, and Painter's back there drumming. But
I guess I hope it turns into a real Painter list and we get to see McBain back on that. But man, it does, it feels really, really powerful. Like it's just going into every deck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and it's such like a small package to include in them also.
Who knew that Retrofitter Foundry would see play outside of ninjas? Legacy All-Star, Retrofitter Foundry.
Yeah.
I have a set of foil tokens. If anyone would like them, you can reach out to me on my Twitter handle. We'll provide at the end of this. No.
The true MTG finance.
I do too, but I need them.
Oh, okay. So hoping to get rid of them at their peak. Do that for once rather than at the bottom.
Yeah. It's so hard to interact with.
Mm-hmm.
Is the thing. Like, I guess there's Wasteland, but like, I don't know. It just seems like your opponent plays and you're like, all these things are going to happen.
Wear tear, baby. Kill the land, kill the artifact.
Oh, it's an enchantment land, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
But you like can't, okay. You can't, it's one of the few things you cannot Prismatic Ending because it's still a land.
It's still a land. Ooh, I would love to be able to play Weretears again. Okay, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. When I was thinking, in putting my control hat on, I was thinking Blood Moon, but even that is a bit slow. Like, is a turn three Blood Moon too slow for it? I think so.
Yeah, they have two constructs and you have a Blood Moon. Seems not great.
Seems not great.
You're there with your three mountains.
Then to wear tear it, I mean, I guess you can tear it turn one, but to wear tear combined, you're still waiting until turn three.
Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time to play Hellbreach.
Bringing back the disenchant. There you go.
Hellbreach does both, right?
Hellbreach does, yeah.
Oh yeah, hell yeah! Play Hellbreach.
There's one.
It's not good.
There's one deck in the format. One deck in the format I could think playing a green red card.
Where's Dan?
While we're talking about Saga, how do you feel about the monkey?
So in the last Doomsday League I played, went up against two monkeys and somehow they both nabbed a discard spell and discarded.
Oh.
I think one of them got one of them got a Doomsday and one of them got, I don't know, something else, a cantrip or a force of will or something. But both of which felt terrible.
At least they didn't hit Oracle.
that's the other thing. So also feels OP from that perspective. I guess from a control perspective, I feel pretty well covered because of Prismatic Vista, Prismatic Ending. From a Doomsday perspective, I think that was just variance, right? Like hitting one of my three or four discard spells is pretty much variance. But still, you know, you're between Doomsday or Storm, you know, you're playing decks that have sort of, you know, one Tendrils, one Oracle, a bunch of discard. And if it, you know, I could see it causing some of those decks to shift around their numbers a little bit.
I mean, it really exacerbates like the play draw, which I don't like. I don't know if it's like too strong. And I mean, it's too early, I think, to make that, you know.
No, that is true. I think that's right. It is one of those cards that when you turn one, play it. I would love to see the percentages on that, but I think your likelihood of winning is going to be pretty significantly increased.
Snowballing one drops are always scary.
Yeah,
that's the kind of data I'd be interested in seeing. And I mean, WotC has that, so you know, if it is a problem.
Will they share it? No.
Yeah, they won't share it, but hopefully they'll take action if it is a problem.
Fair enough. Pretty much any card that I dislike now, I just go and put a sign out in front of WotC offices just to really, you know, rub it in.
One of these days you'll give us our direct line to Ian Duke.
I wish I had that. I wish any of us had that.
Don't sell out McBane like that.
I still can't believe the sign. Like, just imagine doing that. Yeah. And it wasn't like, you know, like handwritten on a piece of paper. Like, it was a pretty nice sign, right? If I recall correctly.
It was like a sandwich board.
Yeah. You know, they got a professional looking thing. Which I, you know, and until the moment when you said, oh yeah, imagine getting top, I was still like, bring top back. And now I'm like, no, don't bring top back. That wouldn't be good with Urza Saga.
I'm sharing an image in our chat here. It is a rather professional looking.
Yeah, not a sign. Sandwich board. That is like a street warning sign.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's what I remember. Yeah.
Yep. Boys, I think I know what we need to do next time we go to Renton.
Yeah, but what card
what are we putting on the sign though?
Ian, please call me.
Need to talk re-legacy Jeff. just ban stuff I don't like. We'll all be in the car ride down talking about what car we're going to put in the sign, and then we'll like see it online the next day and be like, why does it say ban Terminus? Who did this? Jeff?
At this point, would it even matter?
Yeah, I was like, it would only affect like you trying to bring it back.
It is funny how cards that were once, you know, thought to be big problems of the format just sort of get forgotten about as new printings come out.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting to think of like the problem cards that endure, you know, like Dark Ritual, like Show and Tell.
Hippie.
It really is Dark Ritual on your list?
Oh no, yeah. I don't think it should be banned. I'm just thinking like cards that have endured, you know, that like that's when I can think back the first time someone actually figured out what Dark Ritual did when I was a child and played a Hypnotic Spectre. I remember like having my mind blown and be like, that is incredible.
Yeah, it gets three swamps out of your day.
And it's still incredible.
And yeah, the first time turn one Show and Tell was one of my first plays.
Yeah.
That's one thing I miss about going to Mox is sitting down at like a 1K. And you see two tables over, somebody's going Swamp Ritual Hypnotic Spectre like 2 years ago.
Someone's got to win the Spice Award. At Connections, like, I think, you know, as recently as we could play Paper Magic, like, the, I guess, 2 summers ago, someone went Dark Ritual. What's that thing you sacrifice it to wasteland someone? It's like a creature.
Sacrifice it to wasteland.
It used to be, like, somewhere. Super expensive because it was, like, good and modern.
Oh, Fulminator Mage.
Fulminator Mage. So it's, yeah. Like, Fulminator Mage. Right. And I'm like, Fulminator Mage? Like, yeah, I'll blow up your tropical island. I was just like, what happened?
You know,
what
form are you playing?
Like, what year is this?
Was this Apox List?
It was Apox List. So, yeah, and then I played another tropical island. They wastelanded me, and I was like, wow, Fulminator Mage.
Apox is one of those decks you just can't get angry at.
Oh, no, I was thrilled. As thrilled as you can be when you have no lands.
No, yeah, you're good for you.
Sometimes you get poxed. I think that would be that's a thing where, you know, if there's ever a point in Legacy where you just cannot get poxed, it'll be a sad day.
You know how Modern Horizons 2 had the other cycle of free suspend cards? And the black one's a tutor, right? It's just like Demonic Tutor.
Yeah.
It should have been pox, like big pox.
Ooh.
Can you imagine just cascading into like big pox and it's like, oh god.
Is that good?
Hell yeah.
I'd be all for it. Let's do this.
I think Profane Tutor was like throwing EDH a bone more than modern.
Who doesn't want to resolve big pox in Commander?
I do. I think most people probably would rather resolve Tutor, but they're playing a different game than us.
Getting banned from my local EDH group.
Right. Anything else? I guess, Jeff, anything else you wanted to ask Dylan while we got him here?
No. I already hit the big one, which is, how you doing, man?
Thanks, guys. I mean, it's good to see you both. That's for sure.
It is good to see you.
And I think, like, if we're actually getting a point, we can hopefully see each other in person soon, too. But, yeah. Dylan, anything else you wanted to talk about while we got you here?
No, I'm super happy to be here. I mean, just give shout outs to both the Miracles community and the Doomsday community for being great and all the people supporting it and helping me along the way. And just so excited to be getting back to Paper Magic and seeing our group's face again, and getting to jam some cards. I just think it's super exciting. So thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being here. Because you filled in for McBain, I think our listeners will appreciate that we're actually kept to a reasonable length. And we're going to take that positivity forward. I'm going to ask you for another shout out. I'm going to finish off with That's Gas. Dylan, who is Gas?
Well, I've got to give the Canadian Thresh my vote for Gas this week. I think you guys are doing an awesome job with this podcast. I love it. I like it whenever I'm on the internet and share it whenever I see the post. And I hope you guys get lots more listeners. I think you guys are gas.
Oh, thank you. We got a good roster of guests in our sideboard.
Jeff, you're up.
Man, I have to tell you, I was having a hard time thinking about this week. The last couple of days, I've been dialing back everything I've read or interacted with online and cross-checking it with mentally who we've done. And I came down to something simple. I want to shout out Card Titan for announcing literally anything about Eternal Weekend more than a month beforehand. That sounds bad-spirited, but it's not.
The backhanded That's Gas. I love it.
It's not. You know, it's disappointing that Eternal Weekend is going to be online, but it's great to have that information now. You know, especially with, like, Elliot and I looking at booking trips for the Missouri 100K and trying to think about, at the time, them being, like, what would be back-to-back weekends, is, like, having it announced now that it's going to be online means that all I have to do is worry about one weekend travel and that's it. And it makes just life a lot easier for planning.
Like, I mean, who has the fastest internet? We'll just make Eternal Weekend like a LAN party. Get everyone in Vancouver in the same room. It'll be great.
Ooh.
Sign me up for that.
This is a good idea. This is a really good idea.
I Okay. If you say so.
Fuck, that actually sounds like a blast. I'm gonna note this down.
I don't know about the playing and the tournament together. We should definitely go for drinks after, though, as though it were real Eternal Weekend.
Well, don't back out now. We gotta sit and like argue over each other.
Bring my
whole
desktop.
Time. Oh, look at this guy, desktop.
My Windows machine is portable. Anyways, we could talk about the details of this closer to October. I wanted to finish off that's gas. Dylan, thanks a lot for coming on. Thank you for always being gas. I want to talk to you. I think I'm sure I've mentioned this because I tell the same stories over and over again, but I think in Magic, you always hear people talk about level up moments. And I think one of my biggest level up moments as a legacy player was before 2015, I think is the year GP Tacoma.
Tacoma, Seattle.
Yeah, where Miracles was like the kind of boogeyman of the format. And you very graciously just sat down with me and you were like, you're not going to lose to Miracles tomorrow. And we jammed Infect versus Miracles, I think mostly to my benefit for I don't know how many hours. And I did not lose to Miracles in my very first GP when it was the predator of the format. And so I always think back to that when I'm like, you know, when you think about kind of like important parts in your Magic journey. So thanks for
That's
that.
Awesome.
Thanks for coming on. Thanks for being a friend, man.
Anytime. Like I say, can't wait to see you both in person, grab some beers, do another road trip. It's going to be fun. And thanks for having me on, guys. This was super fun.
If people would like to hear more from you, where can they find you on the internet?
Oh, good question. So I'm Prepare for Robots on pretty much any Magic-related or social site. So Prepare 4 Robots. You'll see me in, I'm a mod in the Miracles Discord. I am a noob in the Doomsday Discord. I've got Prepare for Robots as my Moto handle and my Twitter handle.
Awesome. And Jeff, where can we find you?
I am still on Twitter at JeffDKK.
I'm on Twitter at Quinomori. If you miss McBain, he's on Twitter at Servant Painter. Was a painter servant taken? I've never asked him this. I'm going to look this up after the show. At Servant Painter, we're all on Twitter at Canadian Thresh. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you in 2 thresholds.
I've got me. Stop!